I know the leagues. I know the teams. I know these players. I know this wonderful game called football.
It's time for Joe O's Value Bet.
Oh, this is when the cream rises to the top. This is when things get hot.
The best plays in football action this week.
Stats, records, rankings, weather. If the goalpost is tilted just a little bit.
Value Bet with Joe O of the Vegas Stats and Information Network.
You can bet your children's, unborn children's, children on these six games.
Value Bet.
This is America's premier sports information program.
Here's Jonathan Hood.
Welcome to Value Bet right here on the Under the Hood podcast. I'm Jonathan Hood. Joe Ostrowski is with us every week as he gives the best plays in college football and the pros. Don't forget to check out his podcast, the Early Odds Podcast, Apple Music, Google Play, wherever you get your podcast, look for Early Odds with Joe O. Download it into your device. That way you never miss an episode. And if, don't forget theathletic.com. Check out his columns there every week as he gives you the best plays around football and sports. And on Twitter at JoeO670. And Joe joins us here on the Under the Hood podcast. Hello, Joe.
What's going on, Hood?
You know what's going on. Another week, another opportunity for everybody. I'll ask you this. Is there anything, any interesting trends that you've seen this week, college pro or otherwise? What have you seen out there?
Yeah, there's one huge trend in the NFL, and I'm a little irpy about it because when you see it going to one side this much, you might want to relax, and it's home underdogs. Last week in the NFL, home underdogs won a perfect 4-0. Surprising to some to see teams like the Jets just blitz the Broncos at home. That's just one example. On the season, home underdogs are 16-6, hitting at a clip of 73%. And this week, there are seven home underdogs. I'm not saying go out and bet them blindly. It's worked so far this year, but at some point, the pendulum's going to swing the other way.
Okay, you've been doing really well on the college slate as of late. So I will ask you to start with your college picks. What stands out to you this week as far as your three college plays?
All right, let's start off with the Big Ten because I know that you absolutely love Big Ten football.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm taking a look at Wisconsin and Michigan in Ann Arbor. And points allowed, these teams are very close. Michigan 10th in the country, Wisconsin 12th. There's a nice matchup with the run game. Wisconsin 4th in the nation in rushing yards, Michigan 6th in rushing yards allowed. It seems like a pretty balanced matchup. Now, I sometimes take, especially in college, I take a look at look-ahead spots. What's coming up next? Are these kids going to be looking ahead to the next week, like Michigan State was looking ahead past Northwestern a week ago? And Michigan has a run coming up. It starts with Wisconsin. They're going to Michigan State next week. And then a couple weeks from now, they're going to play Penn State. Wisconsin, not really the case. We know they're in the easy division. They have an easy run of Illinois, Northwestern, and Rutgers coming up. This point spread has climbed all week. Now, apparently, some of the sharp bettors are all over Michigan. It's gone from 6.5 up to 9.5. Once you're in that region of 9.5, I'm wondering if it can get to 10. Mm-hmm. But whether or not it gets to 10, give me Wisconsin getting 9.5. This seems like a pretty close matchup to me. I don't know why they're getting multiple scores.
Okay, so, you still, if you look at the over-under, though, do you have it 49 or 50?
Let me check on that.
I've been seeing it at, if I told you, if I set the line at 50 for the over-under, would you take the over or under for that particular game?
Well, you go under. You go under or you don't bet it, most likely. What I've always been told, and this is usually the case, is some of the lower totals you go under, higher totals you go over, even though it may be a little difficult to stomach here. But with these two defenses, conference game, I definitely go under if you want to play the total.
All right, we go from Michigan and Wisconsin. What's your next play?
All right, let's go to the game that you'll be watching in the afternoon. Whether or not you're on the air, I know you're going to be watching this one closely, between Georgia and LSU. LSU Tigers finally coming off a loss at Florida. I've had a rough time trying to figure this team out, like much of the country so far. Bulldogs have not had much competition as expected. They are just absolutely blitzing teams. Jake Fromm, awesome season. It's too bad Tua is just off the charts and doesn't seem to be much of a race for Heisman, because maybe we would put Fromm in that conversation. He's fifth in the country in completion percentage, quarterback rating fourth best in the nation, and Georgia is favored by 7.5. At first, I was looking at the Georgia side. I don't like that hook. It really bothers me, and I think it's telling by bookmakers. They think that Georgia's going to win by multiple scores. They're trying to throw that hook in there to get some action coming in on the LSU side. And LSU was a hot team over the first month of the season. But the last seven times Georgia and LSU have played, the total has gone over. They've averaged almost 60 points per game. The total is 50.5. So I'm going to play the over.
Over 50.5. For Georgia LSU. Now I'm going to go Kirk Herbstreit because it's my game. I'm not going to give a comment, but I will say that this could be closer than the experts think because the game will be played at Baton Rouge. How much is that a factor? A undefeated Georgia team going into the swamp.
Yeah, that's what scared me off about this, because the other part of, with LSU, I don't know about you, Hoodie, and I know you pay attention to the SEC close as anyone. I just had a tough time trying to handicap this team and figuring out which spots they're going to show up and which ones they're going to have a letdown. So that's why, in the end, I really just decided to stay away from this side. And a tough SEC matchup, hey, it's wild, man. You understand why these teams in the SEC just try to lighten up in the non-con schedule as much as they can. Like LSU coming up, they got Mississippi State, then they've got Alabama. I mean, it's just a gauntlet once you get into conference play.
All right, so we got your pick there for over-under. You got the over for Georgia-LSU. What's your next choice here?
All right, I'm going to go back to the Big Ten. We've got Michigan State at Penn State. The Nittany Lions in Happy Valley are favored by 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Now, you have Sparty coming off a really bad loss to Northwestern. They were obviously looking ahead to this spot. And Sparty has the number one run defense in the nation. So you certainly expect the Penn State to move the football through the air. And I got to say, this is too many points. And you're getting value because of what the bettor just saw. Everybody just saw Michigan State sleepy at home, uninterested against the Wildcats, who are coming off 3 consecutive losses, and so there's more value on the line. If they take care of business, beat Northwestern, this point spread is not 14. It's much closer to 10. You have more of a debate here. Sparty should not be getting 14 points. I mean, you worry about Penn State coming off the bye. The last time we saw them, they were losing to Ohio State, so they're looking to kick somebody's tail in. But I'm still going to take Michigan State getting this much.
Okay, I got you now. So Michigan State, you're going to go with them. All right. All right, Joe, let's move on to the NFL. What do you see in the NFL that stands out for you?
I love this slate of games, and I'm not going in any particular order as far as strength here, but there is a bunch here that really popped me. And I want to go to Tampa Bay and Atlanta, and we've been talking about this on the Under the Hood podcast the last few weeks, all the injuries the Falcons have been dealing with. And we've been picking on them, and it's been brutal, every level of their defense. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm going to start to take a look at the other way. I'm going to back Atlanta here. We have Tampa Bay coming off the bye, and we both remember what Tampa Bay looked like the last time we saw them. Mitchell Trubisky with 6 touchdowns, no interceptions. They cannot stop the pass, giving up 358 passing yards per game. I have no reason to believe that that changed during the bye. And Atlanta's losing games, the reason is they've had such a tough schedule. Philadelphia, Carolina, New Orleans, Cincinnati, Pittsburgh. So it finally lightens up this week. And they've been scoring points. The offense has not been the problem. It's all been on the defense. So they're sitting at 1-4, the Falcons are. And I'm thinking what the coaches are stressing this week is, look, we get Tampa. I know it's been tough so far. We're sitting 1-4. The season's not over. Next week, we have the Giants. we can get to the bye at 3-4 and still be in all right of shape. I mean, there are only four winning teams right now in the NFC. So I think the Falcons come out flying. We'll see touchdowns from Julio, Calvin Ridley. This is going to be an extremely high-scoring game. The Falcons are favored by 3.5. I hate that they added that hook, but they added the hook for a reason. I'll lay it. I will take the Falcons minus 3.5.
Love it. Love that. This is a Jameis-led Tampa team, too, by the way. We got to make sure. No more Fitzpatrick. This is Jameis.
Yes, it is. And when he came back from the suspension, this was probably always the plan. Coming off the bye, listen, we got to play the string out here with Fitzmagic, but be prepared for this game off the bye. And I think that might even be a bit of a downgrade, a small downgrade, but I can certainly see it. And remember, his teammates were backing him, Fitztragic. DeSean Jackson was in the media saying, we want this guy to be our quarterback. After a half a play against the Bears, that changed. One of the toughest matchups that you're going to have going against that Bears defense. So it'll be interesting how this plays out. I don't think you can go back to Fitzmagic at this point.
All right, what's your second play in the NFL for value bet?
Value bet? All right, let's go to Sunday night. This game is probably so far the game of the year. At least it shapes up that way. Kansas City at New England. Mm-hmm. And what's funny here is the public, it looks like they're going to back the Chiefs. It's rare that the public is not on the Patriots. And I'm telling you, at some point, this is going to stop with Kansas City. And I'm not saying Mahomes is bad. Mahomes is fine. But they can't stop anybody. Mm-hmm. They're right there with Tampa Bay with some of the worst pass defense in the league. New England coming off the Thursday game, so they have extra rest. And now their offense is going to start to turn. They're going to start to look like the old New England Patriots. Julian Edelman, his second game back. James White is getting involved in the offense a ton. Josh Gordon getting implemented more. He scored his first touchdown against the Colts. You have a healthy Gronk. We went from seeing the Patriots have, what, maybe one passing weapon on offense to now they have at least four. I think the Patriots crush the Chiefs and they cover the 3.5.
Yeah, that seems likely too. This is a big build-up Sunday night football, Joe. It just seems like it's going to be a letdown. I think the Patriots is going to lay it on this undefeated Chiefs team.
It's rare that you get the Patriots favored by so little at home. And I saw this on FS1 the last three times that the Patriots at home have been favored or underdogs by very little. Last year, they were three-point favorites against Atlanta. They beat them by 16. Going back a few years, they were a pick-em against Cincinnati in 2014. They beat the Bengals by 26. They were a three-point underdog to Denver in 2014, and they beat them by 22. This is when the real Patriots start to show up for the rest of the season.
All right, what's your third play here for value bet, Joe?
All right, L.A. Chargers at the Cleveland Browns. Cleveland's played three home games so far, and they haven't lost, as weird as that is to say. They are 2-0-1 on the season at home. They've got to be tired. They had the emotional high of beating a division opponent last week in overtime in Baltimore. That was their third overtime game of the season, and actually back-to-back OT games. You remember that marathon that they had, what, 45-42 game mm-hmm. at Oakland the week before. And now on the L.A. side, I'm a little hesitant to back the Chargers without Joey Bosa because that defense is completely different. Think the Bears without Khalil Mack and how different it would look. It's a fair comparison what we're seeing with the Chargers so far. Now, they have two losses on the year, and they just happen to be against the two best teams in the NFL so far, in the Rams and the Chiefs. Sometimes people are worried about the West Coast team going to the East Coast time zone in that noon spot. Years ago, that used to be a trend that people would follow, but that's been debunked over the last couple of years. It's crazy to me that the Chargers are a one-point favorite, or in some places, a pick-em against Cleveland. Mm-hmm. Give me the Chargers. Cleveland won't be able to keep up with them offensively.
All right. Will that be just one, right? Minus one?
Yeah. I mean, we're basically just picking the winner here.
Okay. Because I've seen in three places, two have pick'em, one have the Chargers minus one. So I'll just do the pick'em then.
Yeah. I think we should be fine either way.
Okay. All right. How's the column doing on The Athletic?
Oh, it's doing fantastic. There's so many different nuggets coming up, and here we go with the NBA season right around the way. I'm going to mention this in Friday's column in The Athletic. It's funny because I know you cover the Bulls closely. Mm-hmm. There is no win total that has changed more since the opening to the current number at the start of the season than the Bulls. It opened at the Westgate in Las Vegas at 27 wins for the season. It was bet up so much by Bulls fans that they moved the number up to 30.5. So Lowry Marketing goes out with this injury, and they moved it down a whole half a win because the Bulls fans are still betting the over even after the Marketing injury.
Is that something? Isn't that something? Heavy money going in on Chicago for maybe clinging on to an 8th seed and maybe 29 wins or maybe 30 wins. It's compelling, but it's not surprising, actually.
It's looking like it is going to be an ugly season, and this may be an ugly situation with Mr. Jabari Parker.
Joe, as always, I appreciate your time here on Value Bet. Let's do it next week.
Thanks, Hoodie.
Joe Ostrowski with us for Value Bet every single week. Don't forget to follow him on Twitter at JoeO670. And again, his column on the Athletic, theathletic.com. And of course, Early Odds. Wherever you download your podcast, make sure that you find the Value Bet with Joe Ostrowski.
You're listening to Under the Hood podcast with Jonathan Hood.
Great to hear from Joe Ostrowski with another edition of Value Bet right here on the Under the Hood podcast. We have something special for you as well for Value Bet. Matt Moore from the Action Network joined me on my NBA radio show this week. He gave his thoughts on some of the point spreads, the over and unders when it comes to the NBA for this upcoming season. So here's his thoughts. Matt Moore from the Action Network with Brendan Haywood and I on the NBA radio show that we did, part of the Under the Hood podcast.
Yeah, we got a lot of great stuff going on there. You can check it out at actionnetwork.com. Rob Perez, a.k.a. Worldwide Wob, has joined us. He's going to be doing some great NBA covers this year. I've got pieces up on – I went to Milwaukee last week and checked them out. Saw some really impressive things about what Mike Budenholzer is doing there. And, man, does Giannis look incredible. A lot of great stuff. Make sure to check it out at actionnetwork.com and download our Action Network app.
So, Brendan, in the piece that Matt wrote for the Action Network – You, Matt, believe that Giannis Antetokounmpo is not just an MVP candidate, but a legit MVP candidate. What makes him so special in your eyes?
Yeah, I was shocked because I thought that he probably reached his physical peak. I know he was young, but it was just that he was so impressive physically. But, man, he just looks so much bigger and faster and stronger. And that's the same thing that John Henson told me, and he's been around him for his entire career. He's more impressive physically. But beyond that is the fact that, you know, he's going to have more spacing this year than he's ever had. That was a problem last year. You went back and watched it. Guys were clogged up in the lane. Mike Budenholzer is going to run a lot of five out, and he's going to have a lot more room to operate, driving to the rim, getting those opportunities. But also, I think his assists are going to go way up. They're just going to have a lot more opportunities with Brook Lopez and Ersan Ilyasova to find those guys. Budenholzer and his teammates have talked about how Giannis' passing has taken a step forward. And they say that he's shooting with more confidence. I don't know if that's going to translate to a better percentage, but just the threat, I think, of him being able to take those threes and being confident in it is going to help shape the defense. I just think he's in for a monster year. I think he's going to be great defensively. I think he's going to be great offensively. To me, he's my pick right now for MVP.
Oh, your pick for MVP over Kevin Durant, over LeBron James with these Lakers. You have Giannis as the favorite right now for MVP.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. There's so many things I don't know with the Lakers. You know, LeBron's obviously LeBron, but I just don't know what these Lakers are going to look like. There's obviously voter fatigue, which probably isn't fair to LeBron for how many times that he's been in these conversations. I think Harden is probably going to make another strong push given how much of a role he plays with Houston. It'll be interesting to see what happens there. I do think that the Warriors are one that's kind of getting overlooked. We did a whole fantasy draft on the MVP odds at Action Network, and I wound up taking Steph because I still think that there are times when Steph is the most impactful player on the floor for Golden State. I think that could wind up impacting things. I think Golden State could have an absolutely monster year again in terms of win total. And they, you know, they wind up winning 55-plus games again. If they really put the pedal down, which they haven't in a few years, that could wind up, I think, swinging things. But for me, I think with where Giannis is going to get the Bucks, with them being kind of a surprise team in the East, I think that factor weighs with the voters. I like his chances a lot.
And you also said something else that I liked hearing. You said that he's willing to take those jumpers more. Now, there's willing to take them, and then there's making them. Is he making them, though? I know the first step is being willing to take those shots, but in training camp and practice, are his teammates seeing him make more shots?
A couple of them did mention, they were like, yeah, it looks better. His shooting is improved. Chris Middleton was the one that really singled out the fact that he's shooting with a lot more confidence, and that's going to open things up. And if he shoots with more confidence, that's probably going to, you know, improve his shooting percentage. Like, everybody knows, like, the more confident you are, the better your percentage is going to be. I think a lot of it will depend on how that early season starts. If he gets into a good rhythm, then I think that it could wind up helping him throughout the year, maybe boost him up. I think it's going to be peaks and valleys. I think he's going to have some months where he's knocking him down and he's shooting, you know, 34, 36%. I think there are going to be months where he's shooting much worse from deep. But I think a lot of it is going to depend also on the kind of looks that he gets, because I think Eric Bledsoe is going to have a lot more opportunity to create in this offense. And if that happens, Giannis could get a few more catch and shoot. And the Bucks are very bullish, both from a front office perspective and down to the coaching staff, on what Giannis can do with clean looks off of the catch. If he settles in and is willing to take those shots and doesn't dribble into another shot and wait for the defense to catch up, they're very confident he can be a knockdown shooter if he gets those spot-up opportunities. He's not going to get a lot of them because of how much teams have to pay attention to him, but I think that will probably help his percentage a little bit too.
So, Brennan, you and I were talking about the Sixers yesterday, and you said that based on the lack of shooting ability, especially from some of the key players, you just don't see the Sixers as a team that could win the East or be close to that this season, right?
Right.
Okay, so, Matt, so when I look at your over-unders, you have the Sixers at 54.5. You have them at 54.5. Do you, based on what Brennan is saying, the lack of shooting, especially from the guard spot, do you still believe the Sixers can win 54 or more games this season?
Well, that's the under on the, that's the over-under from Vegas on them. That's where they wind up being at in terms of the predictions from Vegas. I'm with Brendan on the under. I've got them closer to 50. Mm-hmm. I think last year people really bought into that 16-game winning streak that they used to close out the season, but so much of that was Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova were just unconscious. You know, Embiid was out, and that team got on a roll versus a bunch of weak competition, and I'm just not certain that they're going to be able to replicate that. I think there'll be growing pains with Markelle Fultz going back into the starting lineup. I think that the young guys will improve. Embiid's going to be better and probably play more. Simmons is going to be better, even if his shot isn't necessarily improved. I think that they'll be better as a team, and there'll be ways, I think, in which they're going to be maybe better built for the playoffs than they were last year when they really got exposed by Boston. But I'm with Brendan. I think that there's a good chance that they're just going to be kind of limited in what they're able to do. You look at their knockdown shooters. They've got, you know, six. They've got Redick. Covington is reliable, but after that, it gets really sketchy. And I think teams are going to figure out more ways to effectively bring help on Simmons and Embiid. And as there gets to be more of a scouting report on those guys, I think they can struggle a little bit. I think they're going to be good. I think they'll be right around 50 wins, but I don't see them hitting the over on 54.5.
Matt, what are some of the sharps looking at as far as a team that they're keying in on that could have a Pacers resurgence? Have you seen money go toward a team where, because it's kind of like in the NFL, people are looking for the next Rams, right? Because the Rams came out of nowhere in the NFL. And in the NBA, we saw the Pacers get to a certain level. Well, is there certain money going toward a team that could upset in the East or West?
There's been some interesting movements. One of the ones I thought was interesting was Denver actually got a pretty high line set at 47.5. And there's been indications that they're getting a lot of the over, that there's a belief that they could wind up hitting 50 or better. And that makes a lot of sense.
I told you, Jay Hood.
Let the man talk.
It makes a lot of sense when you look at what they did last year, right? Like, they almost made the playoffs for one game out. I think it was 44 or 45 wins, and that was with Paul Millsap missing 44 games. Like, they just missed Millsap so much of the year. And a lot of those games that were close, like, they lost to the Sixers without Embiid in a close game at the end. Some of those close losses to bad teams probably get flipped if Millsap is there as kind of a baseline defensively, just to give them a few extra possessions where they're able to turn it. So Denver's one. The surprising one to me has been the Chicago Bulls. Now, the expectations are really low. Okay, yeah. They're over-under is 29.5. It opened at 27.5. It's all the way up to 30. because there's been so much action on the Bulls over. And that's not public. Like, that's sharp money moving that, which has been really surprising. And I've yet to figure out exactly what the thought process there. But there is a line of thought that says that the Bulls, because of their offensive firepower, could wind up having a better year than expected. Now, I don't buy it. I'm way in on the under. I can't see any scenario. But that's one. The Spurs were another one that was getting a lot of over money when they were at like 44.5. They're not a surprise team, obviously. But it was really surprising that they were so low. But now with the injuries, it's DeJounte Murray. Lonnie Walker IV has an injury. He's also banged up. Lost Tony Parker. Lost Monte Ginobili. We don't really know what to expect out of San Antonio, and I think that's why they're going to be really interesting to kind of keep track of this year.
What are the numbers saying, Matt, as far as the Eastern Conference is concerned? Brendan, you said that you believe that Toronto very well could win the East or be at the top in the East, right? Because we were talking about Boston or Toronto, but you felt good about Toronto this season, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're second favorite. They got 11-4 over Westgate, and they're just behind the Celtics, but they are still plus money. Which is an indicator of how good teams, the numbers tend to think that the Raptors are going to be. My question with Toronto is all about chemistry. Like, basketball-wise, this stuff makes sense. Kawhi is better than DeMar at just about everything. He's a better close shot maker. He's a better passer. He's a way better defender. He's better driving. He's stronger. He's more athletic. Like, there's just no area where I can point to it and say DeMar is better at getting buckets or better at any sort of thing in basketball, really, than Kawhi. As good as DeMar is, Kawhi's just better. So that makes a lot of sense. I think Danny Green helps them with their wing rotation. But there's a lot of chemistry stuff. Like, we just don't know what Kawhi is going to give in a situation where he didn't want to be traded there by all accounts, and he was. He's shown up. He's doing his job. He's ready to play. But we just don't know how that's going to work. And then there's Kyle Lowry, who saw his best friend get traded. And Kyle's always been known as a kind of a difficult guy. How is he going to react? How is he going to perform? Especially as he gets older, and we saw a little bit of slippage last year. He had a really strong finish to the season. I think there's some slippage there. How is he going to react to this whole situation with Kawhi when he's not playing next to a guy who's his best friend, where there was this kind of drastic move by the front office that came out of nowhere? Is the chemistry going to be the same with the bench? Jakob Poeltl, as much as that's like a nobody name, was really good for them last year and helped that bench unit be the best bench unit in the league. He's gone. They've got better depth because they had Danny Green, but maybe their front court is a little bit more shaky. There's all these things. I just don't know with Toronto. On a basketball sense, I think they could be great. I think them being second in the East in odds makes sense because they've got a proven track record. But with new coaching and everything else, they're a stay away from me just because I can't get behind all the instability there and not knowing how it's going to work out.
All right, lastly, Brendan and I were talking about the Los Angeles Lakers. And Brendan, we had our topic and our poll question about the Lakers and asking, in the next 4 years, do you foresee the Lakers winning the NBA championship with LeBron on it? And you said you probably more than likely not, right? Because even though LeBron's great, you just don't know what the rest of the roster is going to look like for the next 4 years, right?
Yeah, I just, like I said, I think right now teams like Houston and Golden State are too strong. There's a lot of question marks on the roster as far as some of the young guys and how the talent will blend. And then there's a question of whether LeBron James will be able to get a star to come play with him, because some of the stars that are out there that are free agents, some of the rumors have been that some of those guys don't want to go there. Guys like Kawhi, guys like Jimmy Butler. So now you have to think, okay, what star wants to come play with LeBron? So right now I have no as far as LeBron James winning a championship in L.A.
Makes sense. And so Vegas has the Lakers at 48.5. You have it right, Matt. So what is what are your thoughts on 48.5? Are you don't seem very confident in that number?
It's a total stay away, and here's why. Because it opened at like 46.5, and the public money bet it up because everybody, like, there's just so many Lakers fans. You look at that number, and basketball wise, I look at this team and I say, what are they going to do great? You know, what are they going to be really great at? The best bet is defense, because they were so good defensively last year. They were top 10 for a long time until Lonzo got hurt and Ingram got hurt, and then they slid and they finished, middle of the pack, I think 12th in that range. So there's a capacity that they could be a really great defensive team because they've got Rajon Rondo, obviously adding LeBron, all of these guys, except like Rondo doesn't give full effort in the regular season. That's just not what he does, because he's a veteran and he went through all those Celtics runs and he learned to pace himself the way all great vets do. And so he's never going to go super hard on defense in the regular season. Lance Stephenson's actually been really bad defensively the last couple of years. I don't trust JaVale McGee as a rim protector. So now you're relying on young guys. And it's hard for me to buy into Lonzo Ball being this transformational defensive player when that was not at all his identity coming out of college, and it was always kind of surprising. I think teams attack him less one-on-one this year and just kind of play their offense versus they try to, I think, kind of go after him because of his dad last year. I think defensively they take a step back. Offensively, I don't know where their spacing is. So the under there looks good except for this. I look back and LeBron James making the playoffs first in 2006. He's won under 50 games or at a 50-win pace in the lockout season one time. One time in all of this time, since 2006, he has not won 50 games once. And so it comes down to, you know, do you look at the overall team structure and say that doesn't look like a very good Western Conference team? Or do you look at LeBron and go, I can't go against him? And so I wind up calling it a stay away because I don't want to bet against LeBron, but I don't want to bet on the Lakers.
Thanks for listening. We'll do it again next week, another edition of Value Bet, right here on the Under the Hood Podcast.